And I was like, why don't I just come there? And she was like, I am not giving birth in a camper.
Ricky, set up the birth tub in the middle of the RV living room.
Not doing it.
You just gotta swim to get from one side of the camper to the other.
Watch it, so.
Wait, what pretty box?
Didn't you want like a pretty box to put it in?
Oh, I was thinking about doing a lotus birth.
That is brave. That's another level. You know you gotta keep that placenta. You gotta keep that placenta attached for like 3 days.
Yes.
Or 4 days and or longer.
They put it in that little pretty box.
I'm gonna sleep on the couch.
You carry that box around.
I'm sleeping
with
on the couch.
You to change the diaper, to nurse the baby.
I know, but it just seems so cool. I don't know. I saw it on Instagram.
Let me know.
I don't know.
If you do it, you gotta document that.
That's where I draw the line.
Ricky, come carry this placenta.
You know, nope.
So I need to pee. It's 2 a.m.
That's what I'm saying. You cure it in herbs.
Yes, I've heard.
So it doesn't stink.
Herbs. That was really weird.
Robert, don't judge. This is a judgment-free zone.
Yeah.
Things I did not know. She has a tincture of her placenta from 8 years ago. No.
Is that what that ago, that unlabeled mason jar?
A tincture set aside
they
for...
They are unlabeled. I should probably label them.
However many
the
years
from now. They're the only two unlabeled tinctures I have, so I just know what they are.
What is it?
But I guess that's a problem if I were to pass away.
Is this bee propolis, or is this your...
Propolis.
Propolis. Is or is this your tincture from your
Keisha's
body?
Placenta tincture.
Welcome back to another episode of Just Graze It. I'm Margarita.
I'm Rick.
I'm Robert.
I'm Keisha.
And we are first generation homesteaders.
Sharing our journey with you all.
And our fails.
Yeah, that's true. And our fails. But also many successes. And some of our favorite things about this life.
Many successes?
I wouldn't go with many.
Many.
Yes.
I'd say we're
is
like
our
a...
freezer full?
Yeah, I've true. Had many successes. Yeah.
How many failures were involved with that
far
freezer
more.
Filling up?
But it's full.
How many chickens have we lost, honey?
Well,
I would say for the
kind
failure.
Of thank God, because we wouldn't need another freezer.
I would say for the failure to success ratio, we might be 3-1.
I don't know. Our farm vet, mm-hmm. he said that FFA mm-hmm. broilers have a really low success rate.
Yeah, I've learned that. They ordered 300 broilers for the ranch that we live on, and each kid will actually only have 3. So right now each kid has 30, and they will narrow that down to 3. 3 is
one. Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Wait, like they'll lose that many?
Yes.
Oh.
Well, they kind of weed them
no,
out.
No, they cull them.
They'll cull yeah. them, but like if they're not in good condition or... So we actually kind of have in the works a plan to adopt those broilers and feed them out and then process them and put them in the freezer. Because usually they just cull them or let them get, you know, they'll lose them or whatever the case may be. But yeah, we're hoping to just turn that into a freezer.
So we actually have a really high success rate.
Yeah, you do. We actually have high success
yeah,
rate
do.
On our homesteads. We're pretty successful, I feel like. So on that note, I am starting my garden for the spring, and I'm super excited. Let me start over. And I'm super excited to start the seeds, but also to grow more of a cut flower garden this year.
What does that mean?
That's going to be so cute.
I know. I've not really done that before, and where we're at, my space is more limited. Last year, we had a 2,300 square foot garden, and this year, it's probably going to be in total, like, what, maybe 800 square foot is what I'm working with. So I brought all my berries and my elderberry, things like that, but what I'm going to actually grow on my bed, I thought it would be a little bit more fun to just try out some cut flowers. So I'm excited to start that. And just do it a little bit different because I can, and we're not as reliant on the food source. So that's what we've got going new for the spring. I mean, spring is like so full of so much on the homestead. I feel like there's something new every other day that we could partake in, but the garden's kind of what I'm focusing on this year. We're not raising chickens. You guys are not raising,
no.
I say meat chickens.
We're going to try and do it once a year.
Box. Yeah, we're going to try to, hopefully we get back on it for the fall.
Oh, we will.
The fall was way better mm-hmm. in terms of like temperature mm-hmm. and making sure they survived and storms.
Mm. Well, so you guys raised twice as many in the fall, so you didn't have to raise them in the spring. That was your plan.
Yes.
Yeah. And you're happy with that. Yeah, I think that's a good plan. I kind of like that idea for us, since we're just raising them primarily for our family.
Yeah, I hate the summer, the spring, summer round.
Yeah,
it's hot chickens. Texas.
It's hot, it's gross by the time you're butchering them. Yeah.
It was a lot better in the fall. Like, it was cool. There wasn't bugs.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you don't deal with flies on processing day. Yeah, I agree with that. So, yeah. Our steer may be ready, though, for processing soon.
Good old meatball.
Good old meatball. So that's exciting for spring. And the grass is just growing and getting nice and creamy.
It's pretty.
Here in February.
Here we are in February.
It's pretty crazy, though. Remember when we moved here, there was just dirt?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now it's like grass. There's a little bit of weeds, but not. That's honestly really pretty, not though. Too crazy.
Very, very pretty pasture.
And we didn't even seed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just let the cows do their thing.
Cows do their thing and the sheep.
Yes.
Yeah, surely helps. So, yeah. Well, what's been happening for you guys? What are you doing?
So, not much on the homestead. We still have our livestock and all that. Garden, not so much.
Compost. I'm putting a lot of stuff in the compost.
Oh, our compost looks good. It looks like
juicy dirt.
Like, juicy, just so lively.
Like Mike Tyson lisp, juicy.
Our compost is doing really well.
Yep.
But we don't have a garden to put in.
No.
That's okay. When you do, you'll be ready.
Really just setting all this up for whoever's going to buy this house.
That's the hard part when you start looking at thinking you're going to move or sell. I mean, that happened to us. And it's really hard to motivate yourself to keep doing things. Yeah. Because everything you do on a homestead, for the most part, is kind of planning for the future. So.
And then for us to get our garden going, we have to get a water line over there. Mm-hmm. So, because last time I tried with 5-gallon buckets, and that just was not fun.
She was just complaining.
And it was so hot. No.
Yeah. You just didn't want it bad enough.
Okay. And then, anyways, we've been prepping for the baby. So, we've been getting things ready, just fixing up our room for another baby. Mm-hmm. Not being able to get the current baby out of the room.
That's in the preparation plan.
I don't know. So we're trying to figure out how to get that going. And just a couple little projects we want to have done before the baby gets here. So like a chicken run so we can get eggs again.
Because yours have been free laying.
Yes, everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah, we don't see them everywhere.
Because the dogs get to them first.
I know, and that we have that problem same. Too.
That's what she thinks.
It's definitely it.
Well, that is what is happening with us, so. Or was.
And then I want to paint the bathroom. Our bathroom.
You want me to paint the bathroom?
Yes. And then, yeah, so that's pretty much it. We're just getting all that ready. Mm-hmm. And that kind of leads us into our topic for today, which is.
Yes, we're going to talk today about home birth on the homestead.
And not just human home birth.
Right. Lots of births. Lots of births happening on the homestead. I mean, that's actually the coolest part about having a homestead is the life. You know, of course, it comes with some sadness at times.
With death.
Right, because where there's life, there can be death. But, and you guys recently had to walk that quite a bit.
Three times.
Yeah, three times in a short amount of time.
Four times. Because remember midnight?
Oh, yeah. And then the one that we were about to process, he kicked rocks, too.
Yeah, that was crazy. That one didn't make sense.
Pretty sure it was all football.
Our daddy sheep that you guys got.
Yeah.
That's what y'all think. I know. I feel so bad about that.
It's okay.
It's our fault.
He lost his woman, so it's payback.
Yeah. So I am a home birth midwife licensed in the state of Texas. I'm currently taking a sabbatical after 11 years of birth work, but I have attended many, many home births. I was Margarita's midwife with their 2-year-old.
Yes.
And she's about to have her 4th here at home with my former partner, midwife. And so we thought it would be fun to just talk about home birth and why people choose to have birth at home and, you know, some of the parallels even to birth on the homestead. So at first I thought, well, maybe Margarita and I can just do this podcast episode. But the truth is these guys are our partners in this. They are very much a part of all the births that happen on the homestead. And plus, I just think you guys will have some comedic relief to add to the commentary. Because I think sometimes the father's perspective is quite different than ours. Like their approach, the things that they think about.
The things they worry about.
Things they worry about.
Sometimes.
Yeah. It's just different.
All the times.
All the times.
It's so different.
So different.
Things that you don't think about.
Yeah. So, okay, let's start kind of from the top. Something I hear quite a bit, and you'll see on t-shirts, but it'll say something that's like homeschool, home cooking, home birth, and then in bold letters, homestead, you know.
And then homemaker.
Or homemaker, yeah. So the home, home, home idea, and that things all go hand in hand. I'm going to say home birth is not for everybody, just like homesteading is not for everybody. So you can be a really great homesteader without being a home birther. It's certainly not for everyone. And honestly, not everybody is a good candidate either, you know, so it might not be something that's quite safe for everybody. I'm obviously not here to decide who that is for anyone listening, but that depends on your state laws. That depends on the midwifery care around, you know, a couple different factors that go into that. But what made you guys choose to have a home birth?
Oh, I'm just here for emotional support.
Why did we do?
We did not choose. You chose
emotional support. I supported.
Well,
yeah. Emotional support animal.
Which is kind of funny because I really liked the home, because last birth I had a birth center birth.
But you would have done a home birth if you guys had been at home. Cause
yes.
Yeah.
Well, I would have done that because it was cheaper. But
oh, that was why. Okay.
Yeah. But
well, because that was a consideration when you started care. Y'all hadn't moved yet. So you were thinking home birth.
Yes.
And then you switched to the birth center because you were currently in the RV.
Yes. And I did not want to give birth in the RV. I didn't think.
No, you did not.
I didn't think the water would stay hot enough.
Her water broke, and things were like going quickly. Wait, did your water break yet? Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, your water didn't break, but just things were going quickly. And I was closer to her where I was at in the city than we all were to the birth center. Yeah. And I was like, why don't I just come there? And she was like, I am not giving birth in a camper.
Ricky, set up the birth tub in the middle of the RV living room.
You
just gotta swim to get from one side of the camper to the other.
She was not gonna do it. And so we decide we're all going to the birth center. And I was like, she's not gonna make it. I was like pacing the front of the birth center waiting for them, because I was like, she's not gonna make it. And all the other midwives were there since it was during the day. And they were like, what is wrong? And I was like, she's not gonna make it. She's not gonna make it. She's gonna have a baby in the car. You almost did.
Yeah, I think the only reason I didn't is because my water didn't
break.
Because as soon as you told me, you're like, do you want this to go fast? I'm like, yes. And you were like, you had like me do something. And then the water broke right away.
That's right.
And then the baby came.
Didn't you put your leg up, lunge in the shower or something?
Yes. Yeah. And then it right away.
Yeah.
I told you I shouldn't have went to work. I told you.
No.
And like, hey, I don't have to go to work tomorrow. Like, I can stay home. And you're like, no, baby, it's fine. Next thing I know, it's 11 o'clock in the afternoon. Yeah, 11 o'clock in the morning. And you call me saying, baby, I think it's time. And then I have to haul all the way back to the house.
No. That's not what happened. No. I called him. I was like, maybe today's the day. And he's like, do I need to come home right now? And I was like, no, you have plenty of time. Plenty of time.
Oh, child escaped.
So yeah, that's how it went.
Yeah, that's how it went.
But we didn't have time.
Yeah. We did. We made it.
Barely.
It is good you're having a home birth this time in case it does go that fast. You won't have to go anywhere. I mean, that's like one of the huge benefits. We've said that to people before. I've had people that had the baby at the birth center and I'm like, next time you might consider a home birth because it can be a little faster for us to get to you, you know, if it goes that quickly. So this time you're having the home birth here.
Yes. And I'm excited about that. I don't know. I like the idea of like having a home birthing center birth and then leaving and being home. Like just leaving it there, you know, which I know like the midwives will take care of everything.
Oh, yeah. Else. You can't tell that.
But it's like mentally like detached, you know, I don't know.
So but I will tell you that I had a home birth personally with my third, and there is nothing like having your baby and just being put to bed. It is so nice. Just crawling in your bed. You don't have to get in the car and go anywhere. You know, 2 or 3 hours after you had the baby. You have all your things right there with you. It's just comfortable. So
I felt the same way. That's why I was hesitant for us to have a home birth because of the mess. I was like, oh, I don't want to mess with all the stuff. But
dads,
I mean,
always are worried about everything.
Literally, I mean, she's right. There was a lot of mess everywhere, and when they left, there was nothing.
We're like little magical unicorn fairies. We just clean it up. You won't even know. Within an hour, it's like nothing happened, and you're just cuddled with your baby in bed. It's so lovely.
I will say, I did like leaving the birthing center and then pulling through the Chick-fil-A drive-thru.
I remember you did that.
And I was like, oh, this is nice.
Well, I'll give you another thought. If it's 3 o'clock in the morning when you It'll have to close. Leave the birth center, everyone's like, I was so hungry and nothing was open.
Taco Bell, no.
Two sides, yes.
And they were in line at Whataburger with all the drunk people. People
like, I'm like, don't tell your midwife that.
No, but it's just, the comfort of being here, not having to rush, and laboring in the car was miserable.
Yeah.
It was miserable. That's and just, like, Ricky's, like, freaking out.
I was not.
Well, I was freaking out because he was driving really fast. And
so, we got you there.
First. No, I mean, I wasn't advocating for speeding.
Once you throw your hazards on, you're in the clear.
So that's going to be nice, just being home and relaxing.
Yeah. I mean, I think people choose home birth for several different reasons. Some people, you know, especially in the homestead community, they don't have great access to care. You know, Robert's sister, they drive almost 2 hours, maybe an hour and a half, to have their babies at a good hospital. It's not that they don't have hospitals, but when you're wanting a hospital that's going to, you know, be very like pro mother and baby, especially if someone's wanting to avoid medication or delay medication and things like that, small town hospitals just generally don't have that kind of culture, and so you have to drive for it. So some people just don't have access to it. You know, I think some people in the homestead community we don't subscribe to, you know, group health insurance. We have a health share. A lot of homesteading families do. And so sometimes they feel like financially that's going to fit with them better, along with maybe just their health goals of choosing something that's more natural.
Yes, that's definitely why we chose the whole like birthing center, not now home birth, just because we had an experience in the hospital birth and it just wasn't what I wanted.
Right.
So choosing the home birth is more gentle approach. It's not, and it's a more informed approach.
Yeah.
As well.
Educational. Yes. They educate you and give you, you know, your choices, and you get to choose what's best for your family. You know, it is a consideration with a home birth versus even a birth center is proximity to a hospital and location. And some people choose home birth because there's not a birth center that's close, right? So they kind of have to. And other people choose a birth center because maybe their home is not close to a hospital and they want to be close to a hospital in the event of an emergency. So those are certainly all considerations. You know, we always have people map out how far away is their home to the closest hospital? Where is that hospital? You know, so that we know how far away we are in the event of an emergency. But especially if it's not your first baby, it can be nice to have a lot of supplies on hand in case things do go quickly and the midwife doesn't make it. I'm sure you'll have birth supplies you'll be getting or collecting or ordering. Yeah. And putting together so that when the midwife arrives, everything's already here. And then, of course, in the event that something went fast, they can guide you, you know, what to do over the phone. How does that make you feel, Ricky, thinking about that prospect?
Good. I mean, I'm just over here worried about if the floor is going to start giving a little bit.
He's
if we
so
had,
worried
if
that
we,
the floor
if we had the birthing tub, because that was my big concern. I was like, okay, well, birthing tub plus however much water she needs in it. Because I got a glimpse of what the birthing tub looked like. Like, damn, this thing's big.
Same.
And then I'm over here trying to piece together. I was like, okay.
Under the house, looking at the floor.
We haven't.
I was so worried about it. No one has ever brought this up to me in years.
And that's what
and
she
Robert
said.
Said that. I was like, what?
I'm over here trying to add up everything in my head. Okay, well, how much does water weigh? How many gallons we need? How much has she gained?
Literally the
second
same.
Second floor of a home built in the 1850s, all wood. Granted, it was a very nice neighborhood, nice home. But none of it never occurred to any of us. And then Robert was like, is our floor going to be okay? I was like, what? I've never heard a midwife talk about this. I've never thought about it.
Well, if you fall through the floor during the birth, you're going to ask me why I didn't think about that. So I was thinking about it. And then, you know, I mean, it'll be good. It'll be good. No, I don't know why I think it's going to be some gory, bloody massacre, because it never has been.
I mean, I was going to say this, not like this is your first birth.
No, because she was talking about giving birth in the bed, maybe, and I was like, okay, well, how many, like, how am I going to keep all that clean?
Oh, it's all
like,
good. They do it.
Works that's fast. A lot.
Oh, it's great, because there's so much water that it just, like, disintegrates into the water, and you're in there with her.
I'm just swimming.
Are you talking
about
the tub?
Yes.
Tub, but also, whenever she's in the bed, I'm legit thinking, like, how many pairs of sheets do we need?
No.
I don't know why. I think there's going to be just some saturated mattress full of blood.
Okay, so you make it this certain way. This is for everyone to know. When you're having a home birth, you make your bed with the sheets that you love. That's your first layer. Then you put a mattress protector over the top. Now, we're not talking the cloth ones. You want the plastic ones. My favorite ones are from Walmart. They're like $8 because they actually have the elastic on the sides. And so it's like actual plastic, like crunchy plastic. So you put that over. And then you put another sheet that you don't care about, a fitted sheet, over the top of that. Then we use Chucks pads. And they are not to be confused with puppy pads. They do look the same, but these are the ones you buy like in the under pad aisle where the Depends are. Because the puppy pad ones actually have a chemical in it. A lot of people don't know that. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to use those. And these are much bigger. And we're like ninjas. We get them under you so fast. And so then when the mom gets up to shower after she's been recovered for an hour or so, we pull all those first layers off. And then she climbs back into her warm and ready bed. It's amazing. Told you. We're little magical fairies.
Yeah, just little things. Very we had good. The birthing center the last time, so I didn't worry about any of it. I just had to worry about getting her to the birthing center.
Yeah, see, now you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. So are you?
That was stressful.
Are you in the birth tub with her husband?
I don't know. No? She had Richard in the shower.
But you were in the shower.
Oh, upcoming. Husband? I'll get in there. Yeah.
You said you're in with her husband.
No. Are you in the birth tub with her husband?
Oh, like that's the
time. I am her husband.
I was like, where are we going?
We
this?
Go together.
No.
No, yeah, I'll be in there. I don't get grossed out by you any of the afterbirth or anything.
Yeah, see me, no. Heck no.
No?
Nope.
He won't do it because there's blood and such.
Yeah,
and meconium and other things, other poop things.
Oh, yeah, there's poop too.
No one told him.
I'm not going to say what I was going to say. I'm going to leave that part out of it. It's a little embarrassing on my wife's part, but I'm going to leave
He's
it
like,
out
I'm
of it.
Like,
it's okay. It's all good.
Sorry, didn't mean to throw that out. We can edit that part out.
No, we'll be good.
It's so normal for me.
Don't they just really scoop can. It out?
With a ladle?
With a fishnet.
Yeah,
midwife ninjas.
Yeah. In fact, when I was a student midwife, like one of the first births I went to, they were sitting there and she hands me the fishnet and she's like, student midwives have two jobs. The poop and you have to poke the baby for the newborn screen. I was like, that's horrible. It's like the two worst jobs. She's like, yeah. I'm like, okay. So, so what about just safety? Do you guys have, I mean, this obviously is not your first out of hospital birth, but like, what are some of the safety things people have questions about or there's considerations of for home birth?
Like someone else or like our...
Yeah, just like what questions did you have or, you know, what questions do you get asked when people find out you're having a home birth?
Oh, they think it's super dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're like, well, where's the doctor?
Uh-huh.
Or... what's another one? Oh, my grandma just asked me this one. I forget. She's like, well, who's going to be there? Uh-huh. I'm like, well, I've told you, the midwife.
The midwife. They're like, who else?
Yeah.
The midwife isn't some homeless person. No, like, they got credentials.
People do not know.
And then they're like, well, what happens if something goes bad? I'm like, well, we go to the hospital. Like, I don't.
And that's why there's a midwife.
Yeah,
I had somebody ask me once, like, as a midwife, they were like, but what do you do if she bleeds? And I was like, we use medication. And this was a nurse in a hospital, like, who should know? And I said, we use medication. She goes, well, what medications? I said, the same ones you have. So she starts running through it, and I was like, yeah, I carry that. You know, they just had no idea that we have access to that. Of course, every state's different, but in Texas we do, so we carry that. Although our clients, we often don't have to use it, right? Because we do so much preventative that they're low risk for needing it. But yeah, I mean, I get the same questions. Not as many because I'm the midwife, so I don't think people question us quite the same way. They probably know better than to do that, right? Because it's like questioning my career. But the questions that I hear my clients get, you know, similar to kind of like what you're saying.
And you get judgment. I just had this happen for the first time. We went somewhere. Okay, that was funny. And they're like, oh, what hospital are you delivering at? I was like, oh, at home. And then the look. Mm-hmm. Like, just the look. They didn't say anything else, but the look. And I asked Ricky, I was like, did you feel that too? He's like, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just so weird. I don't know. I guess it's just a weird concept.
We're going to do it in the barn in a manger.
I know.
That's with the cows standing by, ready to lick all the afterbirth off. With some straw hanging out of her mouth. No shoes.
Veterinarian will assist.
You know, so that's the fascinating thing. Once we moved to our homestead and I started seeing babies born, and not just even the babies be born, but the process after of the baby's feeding and the milk, especially when you have dairy animals and all of that, and looking at the correlations with humans. And it reassured me in so much. And gave me just a better perspective on birth and motherhood in general, watching nature. And there's a couple takeaways that were really big for me. One of them is, yes, it's normal. It's natural, right? Like, they don't need us. So in the same way, I think oftentimes we don't need, you know, somebody. But there have been times where I have had to go in and get a baby goat out, two baby goats out, because they were not in the right position. And we lost the first one, and the second one was a struggle, but we got it out and it survived. And had I not been there, we would have lost all three, right? That was nature. Didn't matter. You know, like, if I hadn't been there to help, they would not have. And in the same way, even just with the nursing, right, of the babies afterwards, sometimes there's a baby that the mama doesn't take to and we have to intervene for no reason. You know, we didn't mess with anything as the homesteader, the keeper, the animal husbandry, but still something happened. You know, I've had where my animals start to not produce enough milk, and then we realize there's like a high parasite load or something, and so we have to address that. And once we do, they start producing again. So like all these things that for me remind me, as humans, we're imperfect people in an imperfect world. And so that is why there is a need for a medical professional, and that's dependent on each individual person, whether that can be a midwife or a doctor, whoever that is. But on the same side, it's natural, it's normal. Most of the time we can be left alone, and I'm just there as the midwife, as insurance and assurance, you know, for you. So I don't know. That was just, it was all things I knew as a midwife, but seeing it firsthand in nature was just a core reminder of the respect for life that we must have, yet also knowing, hey, this is normal. This is natural.
It's definitely true.
Yeah. Like, we look out, there's no baby lamb. And then you look back out the window, like, oh, there's a baby lamb just running around.
So you guys, unfortunately, a couple months ago, experienced a couple losses after having, we've both had really great success with lambs, lambing with our sheep. No issues, really healthy sheep. We've never really had parasite issues, anything like that. And all of a sudden, within a couple weeks, you lost a couple babies.
Yeah, one we think was premature because that one was not developed at all. The other one, because the time frame we were in, it was very, very cold, and where they were situated, it was on a hill, so either the lamb came out, couldn't really get its footing, and then
the mama was laboring with the other one.
So we think maybe that one just kind of froze and wasn't able to get going. And then the other one was doing perfectly fine. Day one was doing awesome. And then I woke up the next morning and I saw mama sheep was just standing in one specific spot, and I couldn't see the other. I couldn't see the baby lamb. So I walked over, and it looked like he fell down a hill, and he could not get back up. So then we tried to, you know, next 24 hours, tried to nurse him back to health, and he was kind of too far gone. I think he got sick, and he didn't make it. And then we separated the ewes and the rams because we wanted to give the ewes a break, let their body heal back up, get in a better state to be able to be pregnant again.
Yeah. Make sure we can time out the birth to when it's
not in the winter
and not when it's freezing.
So we put three ewes together, and then we had three rams. One is y'all's former daddy sheep, aka football nuts. And then we have our daddy sheep. And both of those two are very mature. And then his name was Midnight, our first lamb that ever took. And then, yeah, Margarita looks out there and he's dead.
Yeah.
Not sure if he got pummeled or if they beat up on him or anything, but that happens.
Yeah. So when after all that happened, I mean, I just felt so bad for you guys. We both did. And I know I talked to you, Margarita, and you were like, you know, it was a learning lesson. And what did you guys kind of determine after all that happened?
So he was about a third of the, like the daddy sheep's size. So we think he just couldn't stand up for himself. And we put all the rams together. So it had to be someone rammed him and something got punctured in the inside. That's really what we came down to, what happened. So for the next time around, we're going to ban them right away. Because we hadn't banned him because we wanted him to grow faster. So we're going to go ahead and ban him right away and just leave him with the ewes. Because he was about the size, maybe even a little bit smaller than the ewes. So we're going to keep them together until it's time to
butcher.
Process him.
Yeah.
So it's something that we should have done first, but we didn't think about it because the two older rams were just kind of competing against each other at first. But I think since we put all three rams at once, too much testosterone, and then the one that had no, well, that was younger, he had no chance fighting the other two off. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of interesting. That's the part that I think people don't realize, whether you're looking at human birth or birth on the homestead, is it can be easy in this culture of homesteading to just say, it's all natural, it's all normal. You know, everybody can just do their thing. And there is a reality of, like, looking at our environment, you know, looking at those specific animals, looking at what your setup is and catering specifically to that animal to keep them safe. It's the same way with humans, you know, not what works for one family may not work for another. And so I do think people need to know that going into owning animals, when they start having babies, that there are certain precautions we have to take. We didn't know that. Robert and I didn't know that. And especially because our first few were just, I mean, every time they had a baby, we were out of town.
Drop a baby. Yeah, we just lucked out and like everything was fine. But you do have, there are times to intervene with humans and with animals. If you don't, nature will just ruthlessly decide.
I mean, the time that I had to intervene, the only reason I got those babies out is because my neighbor overheard me. She overheard the goat crying. I mean, it just was going on and on because I was trying to get that baby out. And she came over and saw me, and she was a nurse prior, and she was like, "Do you want me to help you?" And I said, "Yes." And she put on gloves. And it still took us several minutes to get that baby out. And then even with the next one, even once there was space, because the next one I had to turn it. They were both breech. You know, so there are times that we have to be prepared. And she was so helpful because she just jumped right in and helped me. But had I not done some research way prior and talked to our vet about, hey, what do I do? You know, what can go wrong? I had no clue, you know, and he kind of walked me through some things to be prepared for, what to have around. And I hadn't needed that. All our goats had just dropped babies, no issue. And then this one was the last one to have babies, and we had all these issues. And I was like, okay, this is why I learned this, you know, a year or more ago. So I do think like certain amount of preparation and knowledge when you've got any animal having babies is a good idea.
Well, that came up today. You two were all on board for renting out a bull. Because we have some Red Devons that are heifers and they're looking prime. But you guys wanted to rent out a bull and bring it to our house. Like, it all sounded great and I overheard you two talking about it. And
we
I turned around and I was like,
like,
what are you talking about? He's like, oh, we want to, you know, we could bring a bull here. I was like, absolutely not. Like, no, these cows here who are food motivated and they know me, they're jumping fences. I will not be liable for a...
They haven't jumped a fence in a while.
They did it a couple of weeks ago to get to the other pasture.
Oh, but that's our pasture.
It doesn't matter. But then to bring in a bull that does not know me, not food motivated, and is just horny, and I have to worry about that bull competing with our neighbor behind us who has a massive bull, like, this is where the human intervention kind of comes in. Like, you want to make sure that you're set up to be able to breed respectively and efficiently, kind of like what we're doing with the rams. They're just going at it.
Yeah.
And we're just kind of like, well, we'll see what happens. Like, no, if we saw what happened during the winter when we lost four.
Yeah.
So we have to be.
It's all good till it's not. Yeah. And the thing is I think because it's normal and it's natural, most of the time it's good. Like, that's the deal. Yes. Is that most of the time it's good. But being around, like being aware of when they're about to kid or lamb or whatever it may be is also important because we may need to go out there and do something.
Well, and if you're raising animals, you want to maximize. I mean, it not going good means like a season of you lose your animals. Hard. And that's like a 6-9 months, a year's worth of like waiting for that animal that's then going to like put food on your table or carry the next baby or whatever. So it is very important to you to make sure that you take all the steps necessary you can, not being like hyper, you know, interventional. But
so it's interesting too, you said, Ricky, about the bull versus our cows that we have, that they know you, they trust you, there's a relationship there. That's actually something I said after getting those two baby goats out. That specific goat, Clementine, was a very friendly goat that I had a relationship with. And of the goats we had then, there was two goats that, as much as I tried, they were not going to have a relationship back with me. And I said after the fact, I'm so glad it was Clementine because she let me do it. She let me help her. I don't know that the other goats would have let me help her that way. Cause I mean, that's a tiny little goat and both my hands were in there getting that baby turned and out. So, I mean, the same can be said as for midwifery care. I know that as the midwife, like, trust with my clients is so important because we don't want to intervene. We don't want to mess with you, touch you. But if we have to do something, we want that trust to have been built over 9 months so that, you know, hey, she wouldn't suggest us do this or she wouldn't intervene unless it were for safety. So that trust is really important. And I have seen that already just with adding any animal to the homestead is you have to be careful what you're bringing on to your homestead, you know, because you could be bringing disease. You could be bringing in a safety issue. Like, there's a lot that you could be bringing in.
It's like whenever that one that we tried to nurse back to health, that I had a little bit of emotional attachment because I was in the doghouse trying to, I was literally sitting there bottle feeding them. I was like, come on, little dude, just, you can make it. And then, yeah, that was tough.
He was
doing good and they just kept tapering off and off and off and off. And then eventually I walked out and there's no pulse. I was like, well, that's tough.
Yeah, that's really tough. But
it's cool seeing all the animals.
That's what I was going to say next. Yeah, like on a brighter note, the amount of life that can be buzzing on a homestead.
Well, our Pyrenees.
Oh, yeah, that one, that scared me.
Seeing her transformation, because this is her first baby that was born on the homestead that she saw. Seeing her transformation of like the guardian side of her. Mm. Was pretty cool to see because she was, she wouldn't let our other dogs go near the baby. She would start growling at the other dogs, but like not just like a playful growl, like the other dogs backed off, like they knew. And she's just like constantly looking. Yeah. And like walking back and forth and would not take her eyes off the baby. And the last hour, because we were feeding the baby every hour, the like last, I don't know, 20 minutes, her, like before we had to go out there, her whole demeanor was just sad.
Yeah.
So we think the baby had passed like maybe 40 minutes after we fed it and in that little break, because the way she acted,
like she distanced herself.
She distanced herself. Yeah. She was sad. She was like depressed.
Aww. Yeah.
And so seeing that side of the animals is also pretty, pretty cool. The instinct side.
Because we didn't train none of that. So we have our Mastiff, who we've had as our day one puppy. We've had him since that was our very first dog. We got together when we got married. He is the alpha. It is known he is the alpha. But once that baby was born, once that lamb was born, and she got a whiff of it, and there was a scent. And our other Pyrenees, she ate the placenta, and you know she like, but she was more of a loving. She's a
distant the
guardian.
Yeah.
But with our youngest Pyrenees, she does not go after any of the dogs. She just plays. She's a puppy. But as soon as that happened, she would not get anywhere else other than in between me and the lamb. And if I had the lamb, she was sitting right there next to it, just watching the lamb, but also looking to check to see where the other dogs were. And she only did it with the alpha. As soon as he got close, she didn't bite him with intent to hurt him, but she did put teeth in him to check him and say, hey, no, back up. And they put me in a position like, oh, damn, like we're going to have a super overprotective dog. But when I called my boss, he went to vet school. He's like, oh, yeah, that is a trait. Once there is a reaction there, mother, like maternal instinct kicks in, and it is very strong.
That's cool.
And everything was pretty much like that up until the 20 to 40 minutes after she passed. She got super sad. She distanced herself. And then after that, she never, like, she didn't try and go at the alpha anymore. Hmm. Like, she's like, okay, hey, my job is done.
My job is done.
I'm gonna go back to just waiting until another one comes
in. But she was sad.
Yeah.
And then his boss like, give her 3 to 4 days and she'll be better.
Huh. And the next day like, she was like, I'm good.
Like we're gonna have a depressed dog
for three more days. I think that's the cool thing you can note. The longer you've been homesteading and the more animals you bring on, is there's like this synergy that is the homestead of like how they all coexist together. And I have to say, I mean, the same, just to tie it back into home birth, is the same can be said about having your baby at home. That's what I've experienced over the years. I mean, I've been with hundreds of families having babies in the hospital, and I've now probably been with the same amount out of hospital. But those home births are just so special, especially when they're siblings. So, like, the first baby is really sweet to have at home, but there is nothing like all the siblings like waking up at 7 o'clock in the morning when the sun comes up and they realize that there's a new baby in their house. It is my probably favorite part of midwifery. I remember it happening when I was a student midwife on Halloween, and it was a day birth. It had been raining all day and the rain finally lifted just in time for the kids to be able to go trick or treating, and the baby had been born. And so the dad left the room and went and got all the other kids dressed in their Halloween costumes. And so before he took them out in the neighborhood, they all came in their costumes, like little superhero costumes and stuff, and jumped on the bed. We're like kissing the baby, just like it was another day. Mm-hmm. And off they went. And I came home and I was like, I want another baby. And I told that client that too. I was like, it's your fault. You're the reason I want a home birth. Because it was just so sweet to just see, like, it was so normal. It was so miraculous and so special and also just so normal all at the same time. And that's what I love about home birth more than anything else for me. On the outsider perspective of the midwife is I just love the normalcy that is having the baby at home for the other kids. It's just so sweet. And there's an extra level of protection because they kind of know what happened, as opposed to like my oldest one, when he walked in for my second baby, I had him with a midwife in a hospital. It was a great experience, but he still walked into that sterile room with all the machines and the beeping, and mommy doesn't look normal and none of this looks normal. And then what is this thing she's holding? versus walking into your bedroom where they walk in all the time. And that's normal and that's safe. You know, it's a totally different environment. And so I think that there is something really special about the unit that is formed, you know, whether it's just in your own little home birth unit or the whole homestead as animals are being born and come and go. It's really special for the family. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that is pretty cool. Like with Richard, it was pretty cool, like having the girls there and them learning the whole process and not like being them basing it off whatever they see on TV. Because that's kind of like what I had. Like, I didn't even know when I had Isabella that we had to birth the placenta.
Yeah.
Like, I had no idea. I was like, what is that?
That was another baby.
And then I never even saw it. Oh, like, Richard's the first placenta I've seen. And then having the girl, like, having you explain the placenta and all that to the girls was just so cool. So,
yeah. That's, and then be a part.
Yeah.
It's normal for them. I think there's just an extra added, like, attachment to them getting to be a part of it.
Yeah. You know? And they don't think it's gross.
Right, because it's normal. Yeah. You made it normal. Yeah. And the people around did. So, well,
Ricky, did you eat the placenta?
I did not. We did get it put in the pills. Yes. But no, I'm not going to do that.
You didn't just try one for fun. Did you ever try mine, Robert?
No.
I still have mine. Good. Maybe we can do that later.
I'll swim in the bathtub. I'll swim in the bathtub, but I'm not. Look. You just gave me.
Is it frozen?
Very feral.
So, yeah. Mine are, yeah, they're in the freezer. So for me, this is a whole tangent, I suppose. But, you know, encapsulating placenta is really popular. It's something I was a part of even fighting for the legality in the state of Texas. So it was really important to me. And I was really excited to get to do it with Lennon, my third, because with my second baby, it wasn't legal and I wasn't allowed to since I was having him in a hospital. So I had it encapsulated. But there are a few number of women that it can negatively impact their milk supply and their hormones. For a lot of women, it is great for their milk supply. It makes it so much better. But for me, I was one of those few people that it did. So I saved mine and I actually use them if I'm having like PMS symptoms, because especially as a midwife, if I didn't sleep well that last cycle, like I was up at a lot of births, it can impact my hormones. So it'll help me. Some people use it for menopause. I actually tinctured some of it. And so I have that of two tinctures worth that I'm saving for when I go through menopause. So you can save it and hold on to it.
Oh, that is cool. Okay.
Fun facts with Keisha.
So. Yes. Cause so, I wasn't going to encapsulate it.
No, she has a tincture of her placenta from 8 years ago. No.
Is that what that unlabeled mason jar
set aside?
They
for
are unlabeled. I should probably label them. For many the years only two unlabeled tinctures I have. So I just know what they are.
What is it?
But I guess that's a problem if I were to pass away.
Is this bee propolis or is this your...
Propolis.
Is or is this your tincture from your body?
Placenta tincture. Okay.
Okay, that is cool.
You can't really taste
now
it.
Now I'm going to think
like,
about
do
it.
Do a taste test?
Yeah.
Because I wasn't going to encapsulate it.
Or, I mean, you could just save it and you could cut off and tincture it. Or I could show you how to do
you
it.
You wanted yes. that pretty
and
box.
And then we will film it and we'll put it on our yeah. YouTube and you can all watch it. So.
Wait, what pretty box?
Didn't you want like a pretty box to put it in?
Oh, I was thinking about doing a lotus birth.
That is brave. That's another level. You know you got to keep that placenta you know you got to keep that placenta attached for like 3 days
yes.
or 4 days and or longer.
They put it in that little pretty
I'm
box.
I'm
going to
sleep
you know?
On the
you
couch.
Carry that box around
I'm sleeping
with
on the couch.
You to change the diaper, to nurse the baby.
I know, but it just seems so cool. You're I don't know. I saw it on Instagram.
Let me know.
I don't know.
If you do it, you got to document that.
That's where I draw the line.
Ricky, come carry this placenta.
You know,
nope.
So
I need
like,
to pee. It's 2 a.m.
That's what I'm saying. You cure it in herbs.
Yes, I've heard.
So it doesn't stink.
Herbs.
That was really weird.
Robert, don't judge. This is a judgment-free zone. Yeah.
No, not weird. No, it is
it's
not.
It's weird for me. I'm allowed to think it's weird.
Yeah, we definitely judge a lot of the things
I
both
think,
of you come up with.
Wouldn't it be cool?
That's why you tell us so that we can judge it and tell you if it's a good or a bad idea.
I've showed you that before.
And I did not co-sign the idea. I was like, hell no.
No.
Good.
So on our next episode, there will probably be a baby here. And we will let everyone know if we...
we probably
it's none of their
show
business.
Show you any footage of Margarita's lotus birth.
Yes.
But I do, fun fact, I do keep all our kids...
cords.
A lot
of people do
And
that.
I put it in... Well, hold on.
Oh, sorry.
I put it all in one little box together.
Do you know who this is?
No, but
Hold on, Ricky. I'm gonna
make it weird. Is this an old pork rind or is it an umbilical cord?
We grind it up. Every once in a while, we smoke it.
Yeah, but because I think I don't know who told me. It was either my grandma, great grandma, or my mom. But she said if you keep all the umbilical cords together, they're gonna be super close their whole life.
All right.
So
that's what. Well, there goes mine. I threw them all away.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll keep you guys posted on the baby.
Yes.
Hopefully, next time we're recording, there will be a sweet baby in your arms. So, well, thank you to everyone who listened to this episode of Just Graze It. Until next time,
Just Graze It. Hey, thanks so much for joining us today. We hope you'll tune in again next time. Until then, if you'd like to follow along on YouTube and see video versions of all of our exploits and adventures, you can do that at Living with Flores and at Laughing Willow Farms. See ya.